NBC Monitor News on the Hour, brought to you by the Retail Clerks Internationalists, dedicated exclusively to the welfare of retail store employees. Here's Neil Boggs.
The State Department has announced another unsuccessful meeting with the North Koreans at Panmunjom on releasing the USS Pueblo and her crew. Today's session was the 11th since the ship was seized January 23rd, and a department spokesman said further talks are expected. In South Vietnam, backed up by airstrikes and artillery fire, American troops report killing 129 enemy soldiers in a day-long battle 40 miles from the U.S. base at Da Nang. No report has been given on U.S. casualties. Air Force Captain Dale Noid, convicted yesterday by court-martial of refusing to train a student pilot for Vietnam duty, today was sentenced to 1 year at hard labor and ordered dismissed from the service. Senator Eugene McCarthy proposed today that draft laws be revised so that young Americans who left the country to avoid Vietnam service might be able to return without punishment to accept alternative service. As McCarthy campaigned today in New Hampshire, Senator Robert Kennedy issued a statement condemning McCarthy opponents who have publicly challenged the peace candidate's patriotism. Another political development and more news after this from the RCIA.
If you know someone who works in a retail store, ask him what kind of on-the-job benefits he receives. Is he assured union-negotiated pay increases? Is he assured vacations with pay, health, and welfare protection? Is he assured security through job seniority and pensions? There are retail store employees, over 500,000 of them, throughout the United States and Canada, who can answer yes to all of these questions. These retail store employees are members of the RCIA, the Retail Clerks International Association, proud, respected citizens of their communities who enjoy the high standard of living made possible through peaceful union collective bargaining. If you would like more information about this strong, dynamic union that for over 80 years has been dedicated exclusively to the welfare of the retail store workers of America, check your telephone directory for the Retail Clerks Union in your community, or write to the Retail Clerks International Association, Washington, D.C., 20036. Once again, Neil Boggs.
Republican moderates are about to take a look at where now for their branch of the party. A report from Bill Fitzgerald, NBC News, New York.
Details of the top-level Republican powwow called by Rockefeller are still very hush-hush. It is known that about 25 GOP leaders have been summoned to the governor's plush Manhattan apartment tomorrow for what is called a strategy session. The names of those who will attend so far have not been disclosed, and no one will say if Richard Nixon, who lives in the same building, has been invited. Rockefeller's press secretary, Leslie Sloth, offered this comment on the get-together.
The purpose of the meeting is to exchange views on the situation of the party following Governor Romney's withdrawal. It's been made clear to all the participants that the purpose of the meeting is not to seek any commitments of support for the governor, whose position of non-candidacy remains unchanged.
Rockefeller backers in New Hampshire are hoping to obtain 15,000 write-in votes for the governor in Tuesday's New Hampshire primary. This, they hope, will convince him to enter the Oregon primary on May 28th as an active candidate. Nixon is also urging Rockefeller to enter the Oregon race. He says the governor will never get the nomination in a convention draft. Bill Fitzgerald, NBC News, New York.
Rumors persisted in Europe today that the U.S. might decide to raise its fixed price of $35 an ounce for gold. Despite American insistence, this will not happen. More in a moment.
VM, the voice of music, has invented stereo components for travelers, a component system as portable as an ordinary portable phonograph. Powerful solid-state amplifier, high-fidelity speaker system, great VM Stereomatic record changer, all portable. The VM Portable Component System at your dealer's carry-out window.
VM, the voice of music, has everything but fame. You can get a whole lot more for your money if you just remember that name.
Sweden's Prime Minister Erlander has defended the action of one of his cabinet officials in taking part in an anti-American demonstration. In a broadcast to his people, Erlander also said Washington's recall of U.S. Ambassador William Heath reflects U.S. disapproval of Sweden's stand on Vietnam. Recovery workers still are unable to bring out the bodies of the 21 Louisiana salt miners found dead yesterday after being trapped 1,200 feet down by fire. The operation is being blocked by deadly air in the mine. A special chamber is being built for the recovery crews to work from. Once again, the hour's top story. The State Department has announced another unsuccessful meeting with the North Koreans at Panmunjom on releasing the USS Pueblo and her crew. Neil Boggs, NBC News, Washington.
Listen again on the hour when VM, the voice of music, brings you NBC Monitor News.
This is Bob Brady, WNBC News. It's 5:05, 45 degrees in New York, and it's raining. Adam Clayton Powell will run again for Congress from Harlem's 18th Congressional District with the backing of Harlem Democratic leaders. Powell has been living in the West Indies to avoid warrants issued for his arrest in connection with a contempt of court charge. Powell won a special election last April after Congress declared a seat vacant, but the House still refused to seat him. Congressman Otis Spiker Riverhead appeared before Democratic Party leaders in Nassau County today in an effort to win their support for his candidacy for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate seat held by Republican Jacob Javits. The leaders said Pike's support of the administration position on Vietnam was given considerable attention. An estimated 500 to 600 demonstrators picketed the Russian mission to the United Nations on East 68th Street this afternoon, protesting Russian policies in the Ukraine. The picketers said they belong to an organization called Ukrainians for Freedom. A building originally designed as part of the New York Pavilion for the 1964 World's Fair will be renovated and used for the first permanent repertory company in Queens. Architect Philip Johnson will redesign the Theaterama building in Flushing to accommodate 500 persons by the spring of 1967. The Most Reverend Terence Cook said his first public mass today since the announcement yesterday that he would succeed the late Cardinal Spellman as Archbishop of New York. Bishop Cook said mass at Misericordia Hospital in the Bronx, then visited with the staff and patients. The hospital is not far from where the bishop was reared. The present WNBC temperature is 45 degrees and it is raining. Cloudy with occasional light rain this evening and partial clearing later tonight. Lowest in the low 40s. Sunday, cloudy in the morning, becoming partly sunny and mild during the afternoon, highest near 60. Mostly cloudy and mild Sunday night. Monday, cloudy and cooler, with a chance of rain developing. Now, repeating the present WNBC temperature, it is 45 degrees. This is Bob Brady, WNBC News.
Don't move, just leave your dial. Here's Monitor. Lean back and stay a while. Here's Monitor.
Hi, this is Monitor 68, and I'm Alan Ludden, sitting in for Ed McMahon as your host. 4 minutes ahead, Monitor critic Leonard Probst will discuss the work of some of the members of the New School of Negro Playwrights. But first, here's a brand new one from that native of our 50th state.
By the deep blue pearly water, watch a foam right to the sand. There on the brink of love, I kissed her and obey a man. Where the deep blue pearly water wash upon by to the sand, we watch the sun set in the evening in a far and distant land. So here beneath God's blue heaven, there's a place I must go. See the sun set in the evening for the one I know. Where the deep blue pearly water wash upon, wash upon, wash till the sand. There kissed her.
Love, I kissed her.
And oh, babe, my husband,
Don Ho, of course, with White Silver Sand.
Hey, man, I'm so hungry, I could eat a horse.
No, not me. Indigestion bothers me when I eat too well.
Haven't you heard about Digel?
Digel?
You see, when you get indigestion, you may have double trouble. Excess acid and heartburn. Now, plain antacids neutralize excess acid, but they have no direct effect on heartburn. Gas. Digel relieves both.
Well, what's in Digel?
Well, first, Digel contains simethicone, an extra ingredient that helps relieve heartburn, gas, that too-full feeling. Second, Digel's modern antacids neutralize excess acid easily, so you feel better fast. To get double-action relief of indigestion's double trouble, get Digel. Works as no plain antacid can.
When you get a minor kitchen burn, stop the pain with Solarcaine. More effective than ordinary first aids that have no pain-killing ingredients. Solarcaine contains benzocaine, medication used by doctors. Cools, soothes, aids healing. Stop skin pain with Solarcaine. Spray, lotion, or cream.
Next, Monitor critic Leonard Probst takes a look at a rather unusual opening night that took place off-Broadway this week.
A good group of three one-act plays opened this week, but with an offensive title. The plays are called The Electronic Nigger and Others. They're written by a young writer named Ed Bullins and are being presented at the highly respected off-Broadway playhouse, the American Place Theater. That's where Faye Dunaway starred in the award-winning play Hogan's Goat a couple of years before she made that movie Bonnie and Clyde. Getting back to the electronic nigger, it is indicative of a new trend. The Negro Theater, or as it prefers to be called, the Black Theater, is coming to life in the off-Broadway playhouses. This is not the old-style Negro who shared as a member of a cast or who was used for his exceptional talents as a performer. Nor is this the Negro simply out to shock the white audience. This is the Black Arts, performed both with mixed and all Negro casts, but essentially these plays are colorblind. They are written by blacks for themselves, but anybody can come to see them who wants to. To take the second of the three plays, the one called The Electronic Nigger, it could as well be done by an all-white cast. The satiric comedy is set in a writing class of a Southern California community college. A dignified, decent young teacher, a plodding humanist, is teaching his very first class. In walks a bearded, overbearing student. He is the electronic nigger, the modern man, the mechanical intellectual. Like many successful and powerful business executives, he uses large words, technological jargon, and computerized graphs. At first, the class dislikes him and sides with the teacher, but in the end, the modern man wins. He pours out a stream of observations on things such as alienation, recidivism, and peer groups. All of it very plausible, very impressive, and totally meaningless. He never raises his voice, but the teacher screams, the teacher jumps on his desk, and finally gets sick. However, nothing deters the electronic nigger who is programmed like a computer. Another successful Negro group that started just this season is the Negro Ensemble Company, and they resulted from a $400,000 grant from the Ford Foundation. That group has given two plays, and both have been hits financially as well as critically. Broadway, too, of course, has its Negroes, but they tend to be the Negroes of the past. Some are popular and tremendously talented, but they essentially are cast in a traditional role. Pearl Bailey and Cab Calloway and an all-Negro cast has given new life to the musical Hello, Dolly. It's a fine show, but in a sense, it's a Cotton Club review on Broadway. The difference is that off-Broadway is alert to what's happening in America today. Ugly, sad, bitter, funny, and foolish. Broadway is too expensive a place for experiments. But I would guess the success of the Black Theater and the off-Broadway playhouses will bring the Black Arts to Broadway in the near future. This is Leonard Probst, NBC News, New York, and that's it from off-Broadway.
The time is 15 minutes after the hour, and in just 4 minutes more, Mel Allen will bring us all the latest news from the world of sports. So stay with us. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
Sports page, front page, entertainment page. The Bill Mazur Show turns from one main event of the day to another. This is Bill Mazur inviting you to join me as the men who are news make news on my program. Weekdays from 4 to 7 p.m. on WNBC Radio.
Monitor, New York. WNBC, New York.
Things have changed. Even Girl Scout cookies. They come in five varieties this year. Butter-flavored shortbread, chocolate-covered mint, vanilla and chocolate cream-filled sandwich, peanut butter, and the newest, cocoa cookies. The now cookie of the Scout generation. Girl Scout cookie sale begins March 8th and continues through March 18th. Buying cookies is a delicious way to support Girl Scouting, which over the past 50 years has taught millions of girls throughout the world values which last them throughout their lives.
Stay right here on the NBC.
You'll want to be right here on NBC Monitor this evening, too, when we'll be presenting a special program of highlights from Al Capp's appearance at Mills College of Education in New York City. It's a lively question and answer session between Al and the student body. So be sure to hear it right after the news at 9 p.m. New York time. Right now, Monitor Music, the vocal collaboration of Simon and Garfunkel as they team up on their latest, Scarborough Fair.
Scarborough Fair. Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to mother's bed. She once was a child.
One moment, Mel Allen reports on Today in Sports. Monitor Sports is brought to you by One A Day and Chucks, vitamin insurance for the whole family.
If you think your family is getting enough of the right foods, you'll be surprised at a new government report on nutrition. It indicates that 50%, yes, 50% of American families studied have diets that fall below the recommended levels in one or more vitamins or other nutrients. 20% of the diets are rated poor, below two-thirds of the recommended levels. The most common vitamin shortages are in vitamin A and vitamin C. Diets are worse now than a decade ago. Both rich and poor are choosing the wrong foods. Maybe you are too.
So why not take out some vitamin insurance? Give your family one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Or if your children like the chewy kind, give them Chocs chewable vitamins. Both supply vitamin A and vitamin C, plus all the other vitamins you normally need to take. Start your day with one-a-day or Chocs. Family vitamin insurance from Miles Laboratories.
At the Monitor Sports Desk now, Mel Allen.
Thank you very much, Allen Ludden. The NCAA basketball tournament is underway today, and in the Eastern Regionals, Ivy League champion Columbia beat LaSalle 83-69, climaxing a very fine day for the Lions' tutor, Jack Rowan, who earlier learned that the New York Baseball Writers Association named him as their coach of the year. In the second game of the doubleheader, Davidson defeated St. John's of Brooklyn 79-70. Among other NCAA tournament games on tap today, top-ranked and undefeated Houston will play Loyola of Chicago, and third-ranked and unbeaten St. Bonaventure plays Boston College. In non-tournament games, Kansas 91, Iowa State 58, Wichita State 85, Tulsa 81, Purdue 68, and Indiana 64. There's a report that Westminster College coach Charles Buzz Riddle will be named successor to Bob Timmons at Pittsburgh, the official announcement expected on Monday. A national curling champion was crowned today. A report from Monitor's Lee Stevens in Madison, Wisconsin.
In the ancient sport of curling, there are no professionals, a strict code of conduct, very few spectators, and precious little publicity. But those who are afflicted with a curling sickness never seem to recover, nor do they wish to. Here in Madison, Wisconsin this week, curlers from all over the continental United States and Alaska congregated for the National Curling Championships. In the round-robin tournament, Superior, Wisconsin, the Bud Somerville rink, ran up a string of five straight wins before they were upset by Detroit 7-5 Thursday afternoon. But the Badgers righted themselves and scored three more victories before running into the defending champions, Seattle, Washington. Wisconsin took a 10-4 victory there and pushed the champs into second place. Today, Wisconsin slipped by San Francisco and clinched the National Curling Championship, their second since 1965. This is Lee Stevens reporting from Madison, Wisconsin for Monitor Sports.
Thank you very much, Lee. In exhibition baseball, Tommy Agee's first appearance as a member of the New York Mets is something I think he'd rather forget. He was hit behind the left ear by a pitch thrown by St. Louis Cardinal World Series hero Bob Gibson. A.G. was carried from the field on a stretcher, never lost consciousness. The X-rays were negative. The Cards won the game 4-0, but all A.G. had to show for it was a bump. Atlanta beat Los Angeles 3-1. Brave third baseman Cleet Boyer came to terms with Atlanta for $47,500. The New York Yankees 5 and Baltimore 3. Pittsburgh 5, Philadelphia 2. And by the way, Phil's third baseman, Richie Allen, who went AWOL yesterday, was back in camp today, and club general manager John Quinn said Allen definitely would be fined. The amount, probably $500. It was Oakland 5, Boston 1, Washington 3, Houston 1, Detroit 6, Minnesota 1. It's spring training and the Frogs have come early. International Olympic Committee President Avery Brundage said today he had the authority to call an extraordinary session of the IOC to reconsider the admission of South Africa to the Mexico City Olympics as requested in the last 24 hours by both Mexico and France. But he added he preferred that such an important decision be made by the Executive Committee of the IOC, which he hinted would meet on approximately April 14th in Lausanne, Switzerland. 43 nations have announced they'll boycott the games if South Africa competes. The latest, the Ivory Coast. Meanwhile, the Boston Globe reports that Negro tennis ace Arthur Ashe may not represent the United States in Davis Cup play this year in protest against South Africa's apartheid policies. That takes care of all the sports at this time. Stay tuned to Monitor for all the latest in sports. That's it, Ed.
Ed? Hi, I'm sitting in for Ed, though I can see your mistake. Now, here's a word about State Farm.
Hi, I'm Phil Foster. You remember the other day when I was telling you about the State Farm homeowners policy? The big package of protection from State Farm fire and casualty that costs less than most other companies charge. What I didn't tell you is that your State Farm agent is in the yellow pages. That is, when he's not in his office.
For your home and your car and your life. State Farm is all you need to know about insurance.
Mel Allen, with all the sports news, is a regular on Monitor 68.
Hi-ho, hey-hey, chew your little troubles away. Hi-ho, hey-hey, chew Wrigley's spearmint gum. Work goes faster, smoother too. Life seems brighter when you chew. Hi-ho, hey-hey, chew Wrigley's spearmint gum. Get some soon.
Frank Purcell and the orchestra were their latest, Yeah, Yeah, but it sounded more to me like Yetta Yetta or something.
This is Ed McMahon. There are six of us at our house, well, plus an old English sheepdog who visits occasionally, and between us, we can get through a lot of shampoo. You ask my son Michael about washing an old English sheepdog. That's why Breck Concentrate Shampoo is such a good deal for us. Being a concentrate, just a little, makes a lot of lather. So one tube lasts forever, it seems, and we're not always running out like we used to. Why don't you try it? Breck Concentrate Shampoo.
And that, Mel, was the real Ed McMahon. And this is the real Monitor 68, nationwide entertainment at its best. In southern Arizona, we're heard on KCEE in Tucson. And wherever you are, you'll be wanting to hear Monitor later today with Ted Steele as your host, when you'll meet Cab Calloway talking about his new starring role in Hello, Dolly. Ray Bolger, who'll reveal how he keeps physically fit at age 64. Australian singers Chris and Peter Allen holding forth on Aussie slang. Plus, the aforementioned half-hour special program of highlights from Al Capp's recent appearance at New York's Mills College of Education. So be sure to listen later today on Monitor. Right after station identification, we'll be around again.
This is Keith Jackson. I'll be back later today with all the latest auto racing action right here on Monitor. What's new? Wetson's restaurants have the answer. Wetson's fish and chips. Yes, now fish and chips. Join Wetson's hamburgers, cheese, and chicken in the world of good eating at Wetson's. This latest Wetson's taste sensation is tender fish fillet on a toasted bun with Wetson's special dressing and tartar sauce. It's served with a generous portion of golden Idaho French fried potatoes. And the price is really low, only 44 cents. All of the Wetson's food is of the finest quality. That's why, for years, Wetson's hamburgers restaurants have set the standard for quality and excellence. And Wetson's is a fun place to be. Congenial atmosphere, courteous service, and plenty of free parking. So why not join the fun at Wetson's for a quick snack to a complete meal? And don't forget, now it's Wetson's for fish and chips. There's a Wetson's hamburger restaurant near you in Brooklyn, New York, at the corner of Flatbush Avenue and Empire Boulevard.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York.
Montgomery, the orchestra, and a rococo portrait of Eleanor Rigby. Next, the Johnny Man Singers with White on White.
Like a
Weekend Companion keeps you up to date with news, news and music and comedy on NBC.
This is Alan Ludden with more of Monitor 68, where in just 3.5 minutes, we'll meet the author of a fascinating new book entitled Kennedy and Johnson. But first, let's meet Tony Bennett, who sings about the glory of love.
You've got to give a little, take a little, and let your poor heart break a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love. You've got to laugh just a little, cry a little, before the clouds roll by a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love. As long as there's the two of us, we've got the world and all of its charms. And when the world is through with us, we've got our girlfriend's arms. You've got to win a little, yeah, lose a little, and always have the blues a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love. To give a little, take a little, and let your poor heart breathe just a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love.
So true, Tom, so true.
You've got to laugh just a little,
yeah,
and cry a little, oh no,
before the clouds roll by a little.
That's the story of, that's the glory of love. As long as there's a two of us, we got the world and all of its charm. When the world is through with us, we've got our chicks right on our arm.
You got to win a little, yeah, lose a little,
and always have.
What do we mean when we say that your Arnold Palmer Cleaning Center is your professional dry cleaning service? Well, a real professional is a man who knows his business, a man who makes a reputation for doing things right the first time. He knows how to offer prompt, courteous, and efficient service. He gives a little extra to make a good job even better. Yes, the professionals at your Arnold Palmer Cleaning Center take care to do the little things to make your clothes a little nicer. And that's a lot. A new book is being published that seems sure to cause considerable controversy. It's entitled Kennedy and Johnson. It's the work of Mrs. Evelyn Lincoln, for 12 years the private secretary to the late President Kennedy. Mrs. Lincoln was interviewed for Monitor by Den Mell.
Mrs. Lincoln, the book comprises approximately 50,000 words, and I could find no more than a dozen that describe Mr. Johnson in a favorable light.
Well, when you describe someone, if they turn out that way, that's the way they are.
It was not the purpose of your book to paint a totally unflattering caricature of the president?
No, indeed it was not. It's a truthful portrayal of the two men.
Why is the book being published during an election year, when Mr. Johnson undoubtedly will be seeking re-election?
It was not any purpose of mine. I started to write this in October 1966. And as I wrote along, I ended it in 1967. And in the course of events, it just came out in 1968.
Was there any attempt to suppress it by anyone?
No, indeed there wasn't.
Was it your own idea, this book, or did you discuss it with any member of the Kennedy family or their representatives?
No, I did not. And the reason I wrote this book was that after I went out to speak on my first book, I used to have them ask me questions about what they would like to know with my relationship with the late president. And constantly, the questions became more urgent. Just exactly why were those two men on the same ticket? How could they ever get along? They're so different, and they're so strong leaders. And especially the younger people were so insistent to know. And since I did know these things, and I thought the young people and the people, the American people, should know these things. And that's why I wrote my book.
What has been the reaction of the Kennedy family?
I don't know. They haven't contacted me.
Have you any ideas as to how the late President Kennedy might have reacted to your portrayal of the man he picked to be his running mate?
Well, he used to say that I was the most loyal person in the world. He used to say that if he were in his office and I came into his office and there was a body on the floor, that I would pick up the body, put the body in a closet, lock the closet, clear up the room, and go out to my desk. He said I was that loyal, and so I think he would be that loyal to me.
Do you like Mr. Johnson?
I have nothing personally against him, no. I like all individuals. I have no axe to grind.
Wouldn't you have to say, Mrs. Lincoln, that it is an unflattering portrayal of Mr. Johnson?
Well, if he didn't like to be unflattering, that's his impression he gives to people. He did around the White House.
Well, how much of this impression stems from a difference in the styles of the two men, Mr. Johnson and Mr. Kennedy, rather than the substance of their accomplishment or their own innate abilities?
I think that a lot of this is describing the events that took place, described the two men. The one was from the Southwest, the other one was from New England, and they lived in two different worlds. Now, I will say this about President Johnson. He was an authority on the domestic affairs. He really was. And President Kennedy knew the domestic affairs, but he was an authority on foreign affairs. He was on first-name basis with a lot of these world leaders. And so within those two, there were two things. One graduated from South Texas Teachers College. The other one graduated from Harvard. So there were two different types of men.
But you also portray Mr. Kennedy as a man being motivated by high ideals and one who sought the presidency at a very high level, and you imply, or at least I infer from the book, that Mr. Johnson sought the nomination through skullduggery or scheming connivance with the backroom politicos. The contrast was so sharp and so 180 degrees out of phase with one another that it led me to the conclusion that it was colored.
Well, no, that's just the way they did operate. And I showed how Texas politics was. That's the way they campaigned for office down there. That was normal. He grew up under the era of Roosevelt. And Kennedy was an independent politician. He didn't rely on the Democratic organization, while Johnson did. He worked with the leaders behind the scenes. And one was out in the open, the other one was backstage. This is just the way it's described. It's been in newspapers, magazines, books, everybody. This is common knowledge.
Mrs. Evelyn Lincoln, author of the new book Kennedy and Johnson, talking with reporter Dean Mell of NBC News. They'll be continuing their conversation later in this hour. Right now, here's music by the Mills Brothers, a recent one with a catchy tune and an intriguing lyric, Cab Driver.
Cab driver, drive by Mary's place. I just want a chance to see her face. Mary's place. Cab driver,
happy look. There's a little place we used to eat. That's where I laid my future at her feet. Cab driver, once more down the street. Cab driver, why don't you wait here by her door? Perhaps I'll hold her in my arms once more. And then things will be just like they were before. Oh, cab driver, wait here by her door. Cab driver,
just ahead, Mel Torme and the Bob Crew Generation. So leave your radio dial where it is. It's on the monitor beacon.
Hi, I'm Elena Pinella of the Letter from Lee Show. Are you a young gal just out of high school faced with a decision about your future? The Women's Army Corps can help you make the right decision. As a member of the Women's Army Corps, you can receive training in such fields as medical and personnel administration. Your local Army recruiter has all the details. Visit him soon.
Hi, this is Long John Neville, inviting you to be with me from start to finish on WNBC. That's right, WNBC's day begins with my 5 to 6 a.m. telephone show, Straight Line, and concludes with my early hour show at the 4 to 5 a.m. finish line. In between, there's the Long John Neville show from midnight to 4, and the earlier early hour from 8 to 9 p.m. So join me, Long John Neville, day and night on WNBC.
Monitor, New York. WNBC, New York. Once again, Alan Ludden here from Monitor 68. Here now is a bit of American folklore set to music. A Day in the Life of Bonnie and Clyde, sung by the composer, Mel Torme.
It was the 10th day of August, way back in 33. A roller skating around in the town where I live, who did I happen to see? Well, I was close to the bank when the battered old Lincoln pulled alongside. And you'll never believe who got out of that car. It was Bonnie and Clyde. She looked as sweet as a primrose, with hair the color of sand. And then I noticed the blue steel Colt automatic she held in each hand. Big double barrel shotgun he held at his side. When I knew that our bank was in for a visit to Bonnie and Clyde. And while they were in there, the birds did sing and the wind didn't blow, and the world kind of held its breath. And I could just picture the folks in the bank with their hands in the air, awful trembly and scared to death. And then the bank door flew open and Clyde and Bonnie backed out. And they were giggling and laughing as happy as kids, of that there wasn't a doubt. As she got in the car, she looked down at me. What do you think? She gave me a grin, blew me a kiss, winked me a wink, and then they drove away. They shot a man in a manhole. They laid
Yes, the broken-hearted mothers of poor Bonnie and Clyde. Broken-hearted mothers of Bonnie and Clyde. Yes, the broken-hearted mothers of poor Bonnie and Clyde.
A short time ago, we heard an exchange between Dean Mell of NBC News and Mrs. Evelyn Lincoln, author of the new book Kennedy and Johnson. Here they are again with further discussion of this controversial book.
Mrs. Lincoln, you make an assertion in your book that President Kennedy had decided to replace Vice President Johnson with the Governor Terry Sanford of North Carolina. What were the circumstances of that revelation?
Well, if you read my book from cover to cover, you'll see why there was a reason for him to do this. I mean, he had no other alternative. All the things that pointed toward Mr. Johnson not being the logical one, it was very evident that he would not be on the ticket.
But Senator Robert Kennedy insists that his brother never considered anyone but Mr. Johnson as his running mate in 1964, and Governor Sanford also denied it. How did you become privy to this information?
Well, Governor Sanford did not deny it. He said in an interview, he said, if Evelyn said it, it had to be so. So he didn't
deny it. But Senator Kennedy...
Well, Senator Kennedy, as I said in my prologue, I'm not a politician. And there are many things that I knew that a lot of other people didn't know. And there are a lot of things that other people knew that I didn't know.
What were the circumstances in which he, Mr. Kennedy, told you that Mr. Johnson would be replaced as his running mate by Mr.
Well, there had been several times that he had made little remarks about, I said to him one day, I said, well, this convention is going to be dull in comparison to the 1960. Oh, he said, I wouldn't say that. There might be a change in the ticket. So, and there was all kinds of rumors and all kinds of talk around the White House. And, in fact, Mr. Johnson was worried himself for fear that Kennedy wouldn't have him on the ticket. So it was common knowledge. And if no one knew it around the White House but me, I beg to differ with him.
But could you tell me, recount for me, when it was that President Kennedy said to you that he was going to replace Mr. Johnson?
Well, this was on the 19th of November. We had just returned to Washington from a trip to New York, Tampa, Palm Beach, and Miami. And he had been in a real relaxed mood all during the weekend. And he was very relaxed as we came into the office that day. And he and I were the only ones in the office. And he was sitting in the rocker that was in my office. And he was talking about his trip to Texas, and one thing led to another. Then he made this remark about saying that if he were reelected, that he thought he would do something, since he couldn't succeed himself, that he would try to tailor the executive branch and the legislative branch to what we would call a space age. He said, we were no longer in the horse and buggy age or the speeding car age. We were now in the space age, and the government had to be tailored to take care of those problems. And then I said to him, well, if you're not going to have Mr. Johnson on the ticket, who are you thinking about? And he said, at the time, I'm thinking about Governor Terry Sanford, but it will not be Lyndon.
Mrs. Lincoln, there have been allegations that it wasn't Lyndon Johnson Mr. Kennedy wanted to replace, but you yourself. First in 1958 and the last time in 1961, right after moving into the White House.
Well, if he was going to dump Lyndon Johnson, I'm sure he could have dumped his personal secretary.
Well, they said he was too soft-hearted.
Oh, well, no. Having worked with him for 12 years, the man was not that soft-hearted.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Evelyn Lincoln, for discussing with us your new book, Kennedy and Johnson.
I enjoyed it very much, and thank you.
This is Dean Mell reporting for Monitor.
Some footnotes to history, a somewhat one-sided view, but a fascinating one.
If you think your family is getting enough of the right foods, you'll be surprised at a new government report on nutrition. It indicates that 50%, yes, 50% of American families studied have diets that fall below the recommended levels in one or more vitamins or other nutrients. 20% of the diets are rated poor, below two-thirds of the recommended levels. The most common vitamin shortages are in vitamin A and vitamin C. Diets are worse now than a decade ago. Both rich and poor are choosing the wrong foods. Maybe you are too. So why not take out some vitamin insurance? Give your family one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Or if your children like the chewy kind, give them Chox chewable vitamins. Both supply vitamin A and vitamin C, plus all the other vitamins you normally need to take. Start your day with one-a-day or Chox. Family Vitamin Insurance from Miles Laboratories.
More music now, played by Paul Moriart and his orchestra. Nation's number one song on Monitor 68, your number one information and entertainment center. Just ahead, NBC News on the hour. I'm your host, Alan Ludden.
Don't go away, there's more to come, more to interest everyone. Just stay tuned, we'll be back soon with more.